All right, if we can bring it, bring you all back into the room, please. Can you tell me what sorts of things that brought up for you? Is anyone prepared to share anything that felt interesting about that? And don't feel under pressure, you don't have to all.
I will share, you know, the scenario that I was sharing. When I was about 7, my parents had split up. And I'd gone to see my father, assuming that he would be there because it was a weekend, to discover he wasn't there. And then returning back home to find out that my mother had gone out. Mm. And I sat in the back garden hugging my dog.
Oh, no. And what then happened when she came home? Were you able to express that you'd been scared and afraid and...
No,
because
my mum and dad, when they did get together, they used to have lots of arguments. And even at that age, I felt I didn't want my parents to argue anymore. And they would argue about me not being either parent. So I just sort of kept it to myself. And funnily enough, with my colleague here, you know, she shared something similar, you know, and because you haven't been taught to deal with emotions as a child, because you shut them off, it affects you for the rest of your life.
So how
even
has
though
it
you're
affected
aware
you
of it,
then, if you reflect?
If I reflect on it, I can speak to somebody about my emotions, but not be in touch with my emotions.
And how does that manifest for you then?
I mean, sometimes I can... If I'm talking about deep emotions, I talk about deep emotions and tears will come down my face, but I'm not crying.
I feel sad just listening to that. Yeah.
You know, and sometimes I've analysed it myself in my personal therapy, and I know as an adult, I've reprocessed that. You know, and there's so many things that could have been done, but that isn't what it's all about.
Yeah.
You know, it's processing it as an adult now to help me realise it wasn't my fault.
Yes. And that, I think, is key. And thank you for saying that point, that concept that the child grows up with, that somehow it's my fault. And that is, as you say, just unbelievably damaging. Yeah. Thank you for that. Yeah. Anyone else care to share?
Not necessarily to share the exact details, but just in how powerful, as I verbalised what I was saying, what I was going to say, I didn't realise what a huge effect it had on me, and I didn't quite realise how the age of 7, strangely, to my now being 42, how it has absolutely affected an area of my life completely and totally, and still so, and it's just something that I'm desperately trying to get a handle on. But even me getting the handle on it is still another facet of having it in my life. So yeah, that's just given me something huge to think about, really. Good, but things going.
Oh, thank you very much for that. Yeah. Thank you.
I think what the power for me, and it seems really bizarre to say it, but I think it's the first time I've actually re-experienced the event from the child's perspective. I think, and like Hilda says, it's very easy for us to process it from the adult's point of view, with the adult's language, the adult's understanding, all those contextual features. But actually to go back and put yourself in the position of being that child again, and how you went through that experience without having access to all those language, that understanding of emotions and how to manage emotions, really powerful actually, and puts a completely different spin on the power of the childhood event that I was thinking of.
I really appreciate you sharing that, because that is something I'm going to be looking at a little bit later, because when I mentioned at the beginning how working with children really can inform work with our adult clients, I'm a great believer in the concept of the wounded child or the inner child or the true self, whatever different theoretical orientations call it, because you literally have the adults coming. They don't know what's going on with them and why they're feeling this acute anxiety, for example. And it is going back to those unprocessed events from your childhood with your adult cognitive verbal ability to go and almost heal and nurture that child. And so you can integrate that experience into who and what you are. So thank you, that was really powerful what you said. Thank you. Anyone else?
I found it very powerful as well, because I've never thought about a particular event before like that. So talking to Fiona and then having to sort of answer, describing the event, I mean, mine was where I had some sort of kind of nightmarish thing when I was about six.
Yeah.
I saw three men coming up the stairs, which to me is still real.
Yeah.
Even though I don't know whether I was whether I was in a dreaming state, I don't know. I screamed, and my dad went downstairs to check the house.
Yeah.
But then being asked about how they reacted, I'd never thought about that before. Yeah. The fact that actually they did they were practical, but I can't actually remember being comforted.
Oh,
and
really?
That stayed with me, and then I had to be taken to the doctor because I couldn't sleep.
So it really did impact you, and
yeah.
You feel it. Yeah, you needed more than the practical.
Yeah, and I didn't realise that. I actually used to trick my brothers into going upstairs with me at night by saying, oh, I need to tell you something, but will you come upstairs with me?
So that you had some
security. I
didn't realise
that was linked, yeah.
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 Oh, sure, thank you for that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like you're transferring support.
That's it. That's what I realised, that actually I was looking for the reassurance that I'd never had during that trauma.
Yeah. And that you recognize it as a trauma, and that's the thing, people think that the whole trauma has to be like a bad car accident or a veteran from the war, for example, but a trauma really is any sort of acute anguish and distress, something upsetting that has never been examined or processed or looked at. So it sits with you, and then something else happens to you, and it just all builds and builds until you almost live in this heightened state of hypervigilance or anxiety, for example, and then can manifest as depression and so on. Anyone else like to share? So I will just, yeah, no, go for it, yeah.
There was just something that I was, I was talking to Tracy about is the love and attention that you get from an experience.
Yeah.
Seems to get absorbed into your system, your body, your energy, or whatever it is that you want to call.
Yeah, yeah.
But what doesn't get absorbed is that trauma, and it almost like acts like a your body acts like a barrier,
yes,
for any sort of like the negativity to be absorbed. So what we're remembering as we're growing up is not that love and nurture that actually was there with it, or sometimes depending on the trauma, but what you remember is the bad thing, the negative side of it.
Yes,
seems to be there in front of you all the time. You might have got that hug, but then you might have got the reprimand at the same time. But you don't tend to feel or experience or remember the love and the hug, but you'd remember the reprimand more.
Mm. And for you, why do you feel that's the case?
Because I've just like, you know, in a snapshot, like, you know, zooming through like in five seconds while having this chat, is that's what I've noticed. I've noticed that. You know, I know my in my family, because I lived with an extended family first years of my like my nurturing years, if you like.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't remember my parents. I remember everybody else, but I don't remember my parents. And I only remember my two parents, my mum and dad, until after, when my dad decided to break away from the extended family and to sort of have his family away from that life.
Mm, mm.
and then I remember, oh, like this, these two people are my mum and dad.
Wow. Yeah.
You know, so I sort of don't, and that love and whatnot wasn't there as much as it was with the the nurturing age, the 0 to 7.
Yeah.
You know.
And it's really fantastic what you shared there about how the body acts as a barrier. And if you are interested in how your body does remember trauma and stores it up, there's a book, The Body Remembers, by Babette Rothschild. Some of you are nodding, so you've come across it. So that's a really interesting read, and there are other various ones on that sort of topic. So absolutely, the body does remember, but we don't always know that. So we get these illnesses and we think, well, where's that coming from? Why am I always feeling this way? Like chronic fatigue syndrome, for example.
I think if you're talking about sort of this, I'm talking from a personal perspective here, but bad things are much easier to believe somehow. It's easier to believe a bad thing than it is sort of a good thing. And I think that's something that I think a lot of people do. You can believe a bad thing much easier than you can a good thing about yourself.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know whether that's actually got something to do with the way we actually process all this stuff as a child.
Why do you think that is then?
I think it is down to sort of like self-confidence and self-worth and all of that, all that sort of stuff. It's just, for me certainly, it's easier to believe the bad stuff than it is the good stuff. And I'd much rather, I know we're going through my training, I'd much rather have negative feedback than positive. Feedback was like, I didn't know what to do with it.
Oh,
but give me negative, bring it on. But positive, it was like, don't say that.
It's like a defence, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's
disappointment.
The worst case scenario
is
there, it's predictable, and it's not going to get any worse than that. Whereas if you're always looking for the positive, you're going to be disappointed.
That's right,
at some
point. You don't get it, yeah.
It's like a defence. You can't trust the positive, it's almost you can trust the negative.
Or
is it about self-worth? Like valuing yourself.
Well, I think so. I mean, I shared with Steph was a memory that I had when I was very young, going to school, and remember being dragged to school. I would have been about 4, being actually dragged to school my first day of school, being told off by my mum for being silly because I had to go to school like my big brothers and big sisters. Remembering that I've got a brother that's just 11 months younger than me, so I was very close to him, but I would have obviously left him at home. So thinking that I would have actually been separated from my brother, and then obviously I was going to leave my mum and having to go to school. And my mum was just like, well, come on, you're a big girl now, you have to go. No sort of, you know, care or, you know, it's going to be fine. And I was just like slung into this classroom, and then all the other children were coming up to this teacher and saying, she's a baby, isn't she, miss? Because she's crying. And I just felt so that's why I'm so damaged. No, but it is, it's awful, isn't it? What you remember, and actually what that has done to me internally.
Yeah.
I could kill my mother. But that's another story.
You need therapy.
Yes, still in it.
I mean, the first time I had started thinking about this and realizing, you know, how important it is to have things acknowledged to you, and if they're not, how it impacts as an adult, was one essay I was writing at some point and noticing that I existed with this anxiety for no good reason, and it manifested sort of internally and with like butterflies in my stomach and stuff. So I started processing it, researching it. Happily now I've looked at stuff, I'm not like that anymore, but there was one traumatic event for me when I was about 5 that never until adulthood and this assignment did I realize it was actually traumatic at all, because nothing was ever said. And that was playing with a friend. They lived on a farm in the Cape. We moved out there when I was 4, so 5 years old, on this farm with this little friend. Mother had disappeared, gone out. And it was that culture of leaving kids to be supervised, presumably by a servant, which, you know, great. But left. We were coming from the garden through her brother's room, who was 10. And because they lived on a farm, they all had guns. So it was an air gun that was lying against the wall. And she just picked it up and pointed at me and shot me. And it went into my face. I nearly lost my eye. And I remember just blood and crying and screaming, and I ran to the kitchen where the domestic was there who didn't know what to do. And following that was the mother arrived home and she screamed at me, "What have you been doing? Why were you playing with a gun?" And I was like, "I didn't touch the gun. It was nothing to do with me." And then grabbing me, taking me to the bathroom, forcing me to blow my nose because she thought maybe the bullet had gone up there and she could dislodge it. Going home, and all I remember after that really was being taken to a hospital in Cape Town where I had the bullet removed. I remember coming round from the anaesthetic crying, and the nurse said to me, "If you don't shut up, you'll never see your parents again." So I remember shutting up. It worked a treat, I have to say. And I only managed to tell my parents when we were back home, and it was a 2-hour drive from Cape Town to where we lived. And then the fascinating thing was, we still went round to this family's home. I remember having a dinner there, sitting there thinking, "Oh, thank God, I'm allowed here, I'm allowed back," because I thought I was in trouble, I'd done something wrong. And I never remember my parents saying, "Gosh, how awful, we're angry with the little girl, we're angry with the parents." Nothing was ever said, so I just got on with it. I do remember being a little bit actually quite pissed off, because the bullet was sent to my grandmother in England. Hey, my evidence, my bullet was sent overseas. And that was really upsetting. So right, let's carry on with the next slide.